Welcome to Elite Wrestling Radio. We're back on the air with yet another episode of EWR. And, you know, we're getting a good couple months in here. A lot of memorable interviews have been done as of late. If you've missed it, last week, one of the most enjoyable interviews for me took place as I interviewed the 50-plus year veteran of professional wrestling, Tony Candelo. In recent weeks, we've had the Mecca Shane Madison on the line, beautiful Bobby J. Go check out our archives. A lot of good stuff has been going on right here at Elite Wrestling Radio. And a lot of good stuff is going on right now in CWE. We just finished up a big event at Rookie Sports Bar, so we're going to do a quick rundown of what you missed this past Friday night. In the opening contest, Billy Blaze pinned the blue-eyed idol Tyler Colton, a man we'll be speaking with a little bit later in this program. The Cannon Cartel, Kevin Cannon and Bobby Collins, took on the team of the one-night-only reunited Boys in the Hood, B. Brian Rich, and Scotty Rapper. For fans familiar with CWE in its early years, that was a very common tag team you saw in CWE events. The two rappers from the suburbs were back for one night only for a memorable performance. And the German juggernaut, Moses Luke, dismantled Adam Race at Rookie Sports Bar. Also, the rabid dog, Rob Stardom, with Kevin Cannon, beat the social media specialist, Tyler James. And in the first appearance for him at Rookie Sports Bar, Bring the Pain Matt Fairlane teamed with the man he trained, super friend Corey Kincaid, and they won by disqualification against the Sons of Anarchy. But this match really got out of hand. The Rookie Sports Bar events are 18+, anything goes, and they're not taped for television, so the gloves are off. And this match concluded with Matt Fairlane taking a beer bottle and smashing it over Cliff Corleone's head, causing blood everywhere. These are some of the things you're going to miss if you miss Rookie Sports Bar. They get wild and crazy, and it was an all-out bar brawl between the two teams. Yours truly, Hotshot Danny Duggan, got some retribution on Stefika Epic and the coach Kelly Russell. And A-list Anderson Tyson Moore retained his CWE 123 approved.ca TV championship in his match against Dick Blood. After interference from Rob Stardom and Kevin Cannon, it looked like Dick Blood was going to capture that CWE championship, which would have been a first for him in his career, and the fans were upset. The fans loved chanting for Dick, and the cult following that Dick is creating at Rookie Sports Bar is creating an atmosphere like no other, and those people were on the edge of their seats as Dick Blood came so close to capturing the TV championship. So one can only assume that a match will have to happen again down the line. And in the main event, the CWE Tag Team Champion Murder City Saint Nate Hardy defeated Blake Broadway in what was his last match with Canadian Wrestling's Elite. This was a 20-plus minute classic between two of the top stars here in Canadian Wrestling's Elite. And Blake Broadway addressed the crowd, and something uncharacteristic of him, took the microphone and actually thanked the fans for his time here in Canadian Wrestling's Elite and coming up to Canada. He, you know, as being one of the best professional wrestlers currently on the independent circuit, he's also a member of the Army, and he's been relocated, so he's not going to be at our disposal anymore. And Blake gave a very heartfelt goodbye to the CWE locker room and the fans after a great contest between the two of them. CWE returns to action Sunday, April 6th with the CWE WWE WrestleMania 30 double feature presentation. And what that means is 4 to 6 p.m., the day of WrestleMania, CWE goes live at Club St. B in St. Boniface with yet another 18-plus event. And as soon as that event wraps up, WWE WrestleMania 30 will go on the big screens, and you can watch the action live with the stars of CWE for a very fun and interactive night of professional wrestling action. So if you're listening to this program, there's a good chance you're watching WrestleMania because you're a wrestling fan, and that's the one pay-per-view a year we all make sure we watch. Come down and enjoy it with Canadian Wrestling's Elite. On deck for CWE TV this week, well, we don't know what's on deck for CWE TV this week. We've had a system error over at our production office. Our systems have crashed and have gone down. So we're currently working feverishly to get the CWE TV episode to NAC TV for Friday night and to WCG TV for Sunday. Our computer system crashed and is shut down and is not starting up again. So we're currently working really hard to get it up and going so we don't miss the beat with CWE television. on the small chance it doesn't make it to air this Friday night per its scheduled time slot, it will be available immediately on the internet as soon as our systems are back up and running. So stay tuned. If we don't happen to get the episode there in time, if the system is not recovered with the episode to be sent to the station, there will be a replay of last week's episode. So if you missed it, make sure to tune in to CWE TV to catch that. That wraps up what's going on in CWE right now. Actually, before we go on to our interview with Tyler Colton, I will mention it was just announced yesterday. One of the matches you're going to see a part of that double presentation is none other than the blue-eyed idol, Tyler Colton himself, going one-on-one with the man we just talked about, CWE Tag Team Champion, Murder City Saint, Nate Hardy. These two have a long past from their battles of the Saints of Los Angeles versus NMAX, so that rivalry is going to be relived Sunday, April 6th at Club Saint B. We're going to take a quick moment, get Tyler Colton on the line, and we're going to have some fun. Stay tuned. And on the line, we have the blue-eyed idol, Tyler Colton. Tyler, welcome to the program.
I'm happy to be here.
Well, you've had a very young journey in the professional wrestling business. Last week we had Tony Candelo that's been in the business 50-plus years, and maybe one day you'll get there. But as of right now, you know, you're going on, I believe this is your fourth year in the professional wrestling business you'll be starting?
Yeah, that's right. 4 years in July, actually.
So for people that don't know, you actually got your start with Canadian Wrestling's Elite. How did you first find out about our product?
I can vividly remember. I left the big Raw show at the MCS Center, and I saw a guy that I don't know if I knew who he was at the time, but after being AJ Sanchez handing out flyers for the first CWE show, he may have been, I don't know, he might have had a couple drinks in him, I'm not really sure, but he gave me a flyer, and I saw that it had Brian Danielson, and that immediately caught my eye, and I did recognize guys like Mentolo and stuff, so I thought I'd better check it out.
Had you been to local shows prior to coming to a CWE show?
You know what, I had met, like, Kenny Omega. I did jiu-jitsu, and I met Kenny Omega there, and he had said to, you know, always come down and stuff, and I wasn't 18 at the time, so it was hard to get into bars, and I just wasn't really, I didn't know anything about the local wrestling scene, so I didn't know that it was in community centers, and I didn't know that it could, you know, where it was held.
So you attended a lot of the first CWE events as a fan, I believe for about the first year and a little bit. What are some of your first memories of attending those shows from a fan perspective?
I mean, there was ups and downs from a fan's perspective, but I mean, the first show with Mentolo and Brian Danielson was obviously, I mean, their match was incredible. AJ Sanchez was having awesome matches, and like, you know, there was, I mean, I don't have to tell you, it's not a surprise that there was, you know, the undercard was maybe lacking a little bit on some of those shows, but those main events were always worth paying your money for and always worth sticking around for, and they always blew you away.
Now, when you say there were some suspect matches on the undercard, does anyone jump out specifically as somebody, as a fan, you would just shake your head and go, fuck, I really don't want to sit and watch this one, but I guess I have to.
I mean, oh, shit. You know, I don't want to give guys, but there's dudes like, he's not around anymore, so I'll just say Bobby Box was a guy that I remember, like, this guy, even as a fan, I remember thinking, this guy doesn't really get it, I don't think. Like, he's not really gonna, you know, he's getting his ass kicked, but he's smiling. Why is this guy smiling? So, I don't know, that was one that, I mean, he's a good guy, and I don't mind him by any means, but that's just something that does.
Some women smile when they get beat up, they like that kind of thing. Maybe Bobby Fox has the same tendencies.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that.
So shortly after, you know, attending CWE events for maybe a good year or so, you then approached me to be a part of our initial Elite Wrestling Academy training class. What prompted the decision to start getting into professional wrestling? Is it something you always wanted to do, or was it coming to the shows and getting caught up in the atmosphere that made you make the decision?
Well, actually, you know what? Honestly, I started doing jiu-jitsu because I didn't know. I wanted to get involved in some sort of activity, but I couldn't find anywhere that was doing, again, it just wasn't connected. I couldn't find anybody who was doing wrestling training. I didn't know where to look. And then I met Kenny Omega there, and I asked him if he was doing anything, and he wasn't at the time, so I sort of just kept waiting and biding my time. And then I remember the show, too. It was Wayne Stanton went out, and he mentioned for the first time that there was going to be a training session held, and I was blown away when I heard that it was being conducted by Mentolo, and I knew that this was my opportunity to be a part of things.
So you contacted myself. I was actually there for your first training session as Mentolo wasn't available that day, and we did it at the Brickhouse Gym. What are some of your first memories of coming down to the Brick House?
I mean, it was that was a great way to really be introduced to the wrestling business, because I remember thinking, like, okay, first day of training, we're going to walk in. It'll be kind of like maybe like the power plant or something like that. There'll be, like, you know, a big ring in the middle of the building, and there'll be 20 other guys, and they'll, you know, we'll be, you know, getting ready to train and learn and, you know, hit the ropes and throw suplexes and stuff. And I walked in, and it was a very small gym with a low ceiling and judo mats. And we didn't learn anything fun for the first little while. We did a lot of running and a lot of squats and a lot of push-ups and bumping on the judo mats, which I don't know if anyone stepped on those, it's not much. It's really not much at all. And it was really a good lesson of how, you know, wrestling is not as glamorous as you might believe, but, you know, upon first viewing it.
And that would prepare you for your training with Mentola, who's very big on you knowing the basics and fundamentals before getting into a wrestling ring. Like, he's a firm believer that you should know your fundamentals and your ABCs before you even get in the ring and hit the ropes or be doing things of that nature. Give us a run through of what some of those early classes were like training with Mentola, because you're the only graduate in the company's 5-year history of our wrestling academy, and we've probably had about 24 people come through our school, but you're the only one to stick it out, and that's probably a testament to the toughness that Mentola looks for in his students. What were his classes like, and why can't guys hack him?
I mean, a lot of guys, realistically, they just, whether they be trained by Mentola or anybody else, just aren't prepared to be involved in professional wrestling. Like a guy like Hump, Sean Northstar, he's a guy who jumps out of mind right away, where he showed up and I think he almost broke his leg trying to do a bump, which is like, how do you even do that? I don't understand the physics behind that. And there were other guys that would show up, and they just—it's wrestling was a novelty to them. It was like kind of like, oh, I'll try kickboxing class. You know what I mean? I'll see what it's like. But for Mentola, you had to commit to it, be very, very serious about it, and not a game to him. And like, I'm friends with him now, but for a long time, it was very strictly a teacher-student relationship where I didn't joke with him, I didn't laugh with him. It was just I showed up and I trained.
So looking back now, being involved in the business for as many years you have and wrestling many guys of a variety of training backgrounds, both locally and other areas, how did Mentola's training impact your career and how you've progressed as a wrestler compared to some of the other guys you've worked with?
I mean, there's a lot of guys who like Mentola was very strict on, like you said, fundamentals, and to the very smallest detail. Like, I did hundreds of squats because my one foot was pointed out a little bit too much, or because my posture was bad, or whatever. And I'm very, very thankful for that training, because a lot of guys don't have that. And now that I kind of know, you know, I'm far from knowing the business, but I know a little more what to look for in things. I see guys who aren't doing that, and I think to myself, like, wow, that guy looks like shit, you know what I mean? Because he's not doing those little things right.
So you mentioned a few guys that have come through the Wrestling Academy during your time. Who are some others that came through the Wrestling Academy during your tenure as a student of Mentola? And what are some of some memories or stories you have of them coming through the Elite Wrestling Academy?
I remember the first guy, he was pretty funny. He had like the Jeff Hardy wrist things, you know, on his profile picture. And he came in and that was actually when you were there. And he did the squats and he was like complaining that he was like having a heart attack or something. Which is like, he was like 90 pounds, I think. And he dropped out that session. He was done after that one, which is actually, I thought that was really strange, but that actually happened a lot throughout the time that I was training at Mentola. Guys would drop out after one session. Brian Rich spent a considerable amount of time with Mentola. He's actually one of the ones who got a lot better because of his time. PCW star Leo London and David London both sat in for a session. This was after Leo London informed us that he had trained in Japan and Greece, I believe. They watched the session and decided that it wasn't for them, and they decided to start working without training instead.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, that's like the logical progression, I thought.
Are there any others that come to mind that came through the academy?
Marty Lavoisier, he was the guy. Marty Martel was the guy that he stuck around for quite a while. He got a lot better, and then just sort of stopped. I'm not really sure what his story is, to be honest with you.
Somebody else that
Antoine Heath,
Yeah, I was going to mention Kat Von Hees came through the school, and she had a very big blow up with Mentolo, who was her trainer at the time, that kind of resulted in her moving provinces. What was it like training with Kat Von Hees, and what was that situation that that built up and created so much tension that she departed the city?
She's nice. I have no issue with her outside wrestling at all. But she listened to too many people. She had too many people in her ear when she just should have had Mentolo. This is your trainer. Do what he says. And she was everything in wrestling. I mean, I was the same way at first. Everything in wrestling came very hard to her. She wasn't a natural in anything. Her sister was a natural. Her sister was actually, like, really, really good. I wish that she would have got involved in wrestling. But everything came really hard to her. Like, I remember we did a sunset flip, and she, like, fell and smashed my face and almost knocked me out. And she wanted to get an easier way out, I think. So I think that Mentolo wasn't that route. So she decided to pack her bags and head somewhere else.
So when did Mentolo decide that you were now ready for a match? Did there come a point where he said to you, all right, it's time to get in the ring and start learning this? Or was it something that that progressed another way?
No, absolutely not. I was definitely waiting for Mentolo to tell me that I was ready. There's absolutely no way that I was going to ask anybody else or assume that to sit that myself. After about just shy of a year, I would say maybe 10 months, we started doing, you know, little practice matches, little 5-minute matches in the training center. We had a great training center after a while. And then he said, you know, I think you're just about ready. And then I spoke to you about getting on, or I'm sure he spoke to you, actually, about getting me on some of the smaller out-of-town dates that you had going.
And your first match with the company and in your career was in Neepawa, Manitoba against Rick Matthews. What are some memories and recollections of that match?
You know, I remember being, looking back on it, there probably wasn't a big crowd. In my mind, it seems like there was a lot. But I remember just being terrified in the back, like, sweating. Mentolo had me do something that not a lot of people do, where I had to earn a lot of things. Like, I had to walk out, complete jobber style, like, with the referee beforehand, no music, none of that. So that doesn't really help your confidence. You know, it humbles you, you know? I wasn't allowed risking until I earned it. And just things like that, you know, but I remember going out there, and Rick Matthews is, like, criminally underrated. He's a really talented worker and wrestler, and we had a good match, and he ended up bleeding pretty profusely during it, and looking back on it now, I'm sure I couldn't watch the thing now, but at the time, it seemed like it was a good match.
So after your match with Rick Matthews, who are some of the other talent you went to work with early on in your first year? Is there anyone that sticks out that was a lot easier to work with, that really kind of guided you in the right direction? Any bad experiences working with guys in your first year? Because obviously, you know, your first year in the business, things can be a little rough, and you have some more bad matches than you do good ones. Is there any experiences that stick out in your mind?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, working with AJ was a guy who helped me a lot. I mean, he beat me up a lot, but he helped me a lot. And Mentolo, same thing. Like, working with your trainer, I mean, you have a certain chemistry, but, you know, so I still have a lot to learn with him. Working with you, I've worked with you, I don't even know how many times, a lot. I learned a lot from those. But I think bad experiences, like, this is completely on myself. I had just an awful, awful match with a former AWA wrestler, Gentleman Jimmy Jordan in Edmonton, and I just, like, I don't know what I was doing. I did absolutely nothing right in it, and I just do everything, and I just thought, what a waste of a fucking trip to Edmonton.
I recall.
And, it's a long ass drive to have a horrible match, you know what I mean? And other shitty times, like when I worked in SPW once, and I got in one match I got to work against Sean Northstar, aka Hump. Sidney Manson was in that match. Like, there was some rough ones to be in the very beginning.
It was a superstar SPW lineup.
Yeah, I guess you could say that, yeah.
So very early on in your career, you did something that a lot of guys don't do, and it's something you've been doing since you started, and that's getting on the road and going out to other territories. And yeah, in your short time, you've traveled across Canada, you know, you've done some trips to the U.S., and you've probably covered a lot more ground than a lot of guys, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 times your experience level. What kind of dedication does that take to get on the road and and do that at an early level? And why do you think so many others decide to stick at home and work locally instead of getting out on the road and experiencing life on the road and working with other groups and other talent?
I mean, to me, it doesn't strike me as needing a whole lot of, you know, passion and drive. It's just, if you want to do it, you do it. If you want to wrestle, you know, you can do the Weekend Warrior thing and wrestle here about once a month. Wrestle here even less than that for some of these guys. Like, a lot of the young guys wrestle once every couple months, every few months. And if you think you're going to progress that way, you're a fucking idiot. And I just, you know, I had these opportunities where, you know, it's cool to say, hey, what are you doing this weekend? Oh, I'm going to wrestle in Edmonton. Oh, I'm going to wrestle in Regina. I'm going to wrestle in North Dakota. You know, to have these experiences, like, it'd be crazy not to take them. I've never understood that people who want to just hang out in one place and wrestle there for as long as they can. And then I guess wait for someone to see them. I'm not sure what they're waiting for.
I never understood that philosophy because you should be, in theory, putting a lot of time into training and learning how to do this craft. You know, it's obviously a lot of damage to your body and it's a big investment to make. So I don't understand why people go through the process of putting your body through that, investing all that time in it, and then not utilizing it, getting out there and doing something. And there's a lot of times where there'll be a spot open and I'll contact 30 guys. Hey, there's a good paying spot. You know, your accommodations are covered, your transportation's covered, you're going to make some money. And it's impossible to find somebody who wants to go on road and be a wrestler. And it's, you know, I think it's a sad state, but it's something that seems to be more common than ever before.
Well, it'd be nice if a lot of guys learn from, like, the promo they shoot where it's like, this is my time and this is my year and it's the, you know, year of whatever. Like, why don't you go out and prove that? You know, why don't I see you on the road at all? Why don't I see you trying to get onto different cars? Like, it's your time and it's your year, you know, in Winnipeg. And that's fine if that's what you want. I really don't have an issue with that. But, you know, people who say that they want more and say they want to do all these things, it's really just a matter of duty. You know, nothing's holding you back except for yourself. There's opportunities that are out there and they're easy to find.
That's right. I think a lot of people get the mentality once they've been in the business a certain amount of time, they think they're worth X amount of dollars. So unless they're getting X amount of dollars, they're not leaving home. But in reality, unless you're going to draw X amount of dollars for said promoter, you're really worth nothing. You're worth what you draw. And a lot of guys don't have that mentality or have that attitude. And the ones that do realize that and understand at this level, any work you take is an investment in yourself, or the ones that get a little bit further ahead. And you know, maybe you take that booking for a little bit less in, you know, we'll use Regina as an example. Well, there's a good chance there's going to be a promoter or booker from another show or from another promotion on that show that might see you. And if you made a good impression, you're now going to get booked out there. And then you get booked out there. And once again, there's another promoter or booker from another territory on that show that likes you. And then it starts to web out. And a lot of guys don't have that understanding, or they're just not willing to put in that work or effort. And, the game of professional wrestling is a very patient one.
Well, I mean, it's easy when you're sitting at home watching a DVD or watching Raw or whatever, being like, you know, feeling passionate and feeling driven. But when you wake up the next morning, when you don't go to the gym and you don't eat properly, and you don't, you know, try to, like, you know, talk to somebody about getting booked on their next show. Like you said, we have guys who come into our city every time we have a show who run shows in other cities. Why aren't guys talking to them, trying to get on their show? It couldn't be simpler than that. You know, they're at your show. Talk to them.
Yeah, it seems that once guys get to a certain level, they feel they don't need to progress anymore. Once they make that decision, you know what? I'm just going to do this locally. I have fun doing it. I like hanging out with my buddies, but I've gone as far as I want to go. That level of wanting to progress completely escapes them. They no longer want to put that best foot forward to either make themselves more marketable, continue to improve their work, continue to improve their look, work on things. Tommy Dreamer is somebody that's been to CWE a lot. And, you know, he's always full of knowledge and he's very passionate about wrestling to this day. He's been in the business a long, long time, but he still loves professional wrestling. And if you ask him to watch your match, he will give you a lot of feedback. He'll give you a lot of, little things that you can use that you may not know or you couldn't pick up from somebody here locally. And I remember one time, I believe I wrestled you on the last show he was here on in Winnipeg. And I, you know, per usual from the times he had been in previous, I went and sat down with him and I said, hey, like, because he normally watches the shows. And I said, hey, any feedback on the way the show was structured tonight? Any talent that caught your eye? Anybody that stood out as, you know, maybe I'm missing the boat on, or somebody, you know, I could utilize in a different light. And he said, you know, normally I love to watch the shows and I make a point to watch the shows. But he said, outside of you and Tyler, not one person came to me and asked me to watch their match tonight. And that just completely blows my mind that you'd have somebody that's booked the WWE office, who is in talent relations for the company. He's booked for he's been a booker for TNA. He's been a booker for ECW. He's worldwide regarded as a good wrestling mind. And people can't be bothered to say, hey, can you please watch my match? Very rarely do the names say no. And, you know, for not one person on a 30-person crew to go ask for that feedback just completely blew my mind.
That's pretty mind-boggling. And actually, speaking of Tommy Dreamer, I hear that he's on the TNA. He's a TNA talent scout now, so, you know, if he's listening, you know, keep your eyes open, Tommy Dreamer. Like, look for anybody.
So... it wasn't too long ago that you went from being, you know, Mentolo's student to being his tag team partner. Can you maybe tell the listener at home how that team came to be and how crucial that was to your development, now working side-by-side your trainer on a regular basis?
Yeah, I mean, we had a plan originally that Mentolo wanted to do where he wanted to have, like, his students as, like, a faction, kind of. And it would have been me, Marty Martel, and Brian Rich. But I'm trying to think how exactly it happened. But I think that, I mean they fucked it up in some way, because they're not there. They didn't do it right. So I don't remember what it was, but like it was definitely something. And I wanted to mention this before, but I totally forgot. Like, Mentolo has this thing during training where, like, he gives you a lot of opportunities. He knows that we're only human. But if you really, really mess up, you do something that he's just sick and tired of, or you do it over and over and over again, he does something that you call the match, and I'm putting that in quotations, where you don't know what's going on. He just says, hey, we're gonna have a little match here, and you don't know what's going to happen, and then he just beats the shit out of you for, like, between 5 and 10 minutes, and, like, just gives you stiff kicks and drop kicks in the face, and, like, I remember hitting Brian Rich in the really hard superplex and just, like, beat the fucking shit out of you. So I have to believe that maybe one or both of them got a match around that time, and he thought to himself that it's just not worth trying to carry these guys anymore. And luckily, I never got a match. I was the only person in the training center to never get a match. And he decided to keep going with me, and we started tagging, and it was a losing effort for a long, long time. It was hard to find a sense of unity, and eventually we did.
And then shortly after, when you and Mentolo did get on the same page together, you actually went on to capture the CWE Tag Team title. So what was that like, looking back in retrospect, to be somebody who watched our first show, was a fan in the front row for, you know, the start of the company, to then go on and be teaming with the man that main evented all those shows you were going and paying to see, and holding championship gold with him?
Yeah, that was, like, as a fan, like, that was great. Like, you know, as a fan of Manitoba Wrestling, anybody who knows anything about Mentolo Wrestling, or even Canadian wrestling, I should say, knows Mentolo. You know, AJ Sanchez and Kevin Chevy are, like, two of the best going in Western Canada today, for sure. They're the ones that we beat, the Big Sexy Beast. And, like, if I could tell myself, you know, 4 or 5 years, whatever it was, you know, training everybody 5 years earlier, you know, you and Mentolo tag team champions over the Big Sexy Beast, like, I probably would have just my pants and had a heart attack right there. Like, I wouldn't have believed it. It was awesome, and it was an awesome feeling, you know, to feel that, you know, I'd achieved something, and I was worth something to the company.
Most recently, you made the decision to kind of further yourself and your skill set, and you kind of caught everyone by surprise when you went down for a small stay in the state of Texas. What prompted your decision to go down to Texas, and what can you tell us about the training you encountered while you're down there?
I just really wanted to go somewhere far away. I wanted to go somewhere that, I mean, obviously people have traveled Texas before, but people, not anyone on the current roster and not, you know, anyone for a long time. So I thought that it would just be a fun place to go, and it was. I went down there. It was hot. I went to San Antonio. I went to Houston. I went to, Austin. And I stayed with a couple guys, shouts out Scotty Santiago and Dylan Dunbar, who don't know how to take care of their house at all, and it was a complete fucking disaster there. But they were nice guys, but the house was just awful. There was, like, fleas and shit on their cats. But I got to work some shows down there. I did some training with Sho Funaki, as everyone knows as Funaki from WWE. I did some training with Reboy Gonzalez in the Texas Wrestling Academy. I'm sure people are familiar with that, having produced, you know, Paul London, Spanky, Daniel Bryan, Harper and Jushin Liger and, you know, guys like that.
So you mentioned training with Funaki and Rudy Boy Gonzalez. Rudy Boy Gonzalez is known for, you know, being the trainer of Daniel Bryan, Paul London. What was his training like, and how did it differ from your training back home?
I mean, they had a lot more guys, that's for sure. They're just a steady stream of people who want to get involved in wrestling down there. I guess it's just a bigger area. He's known for his, you know, his training, and it was his training was a little different. It was just a lot of wrestling, a lot of just like mental load is very. Very hands-on. His was very much just kind of let the guys do their thing, and he'll pick little things as he sees them.
And training with Funaki, how is his training differing and varying from say Rudy Boy or from Mentolo for that matter?
His was a lot more like Mentolo. His was just the opposite of Rudy Boy, where he was very, very hands-on. He was watching you very carefully. He was looking for every little thing you were doing, whether you're doing it right or wrong, and he would tell you. It was a lot of things that.
After you came back from Texas, you know, unannounced, you and Mentolo sort of went your separate ways and started singles journeys. So this will be your first, you know, this is going to be your first run, has been your first run as a singles competitor. What's it been like since coming back from Texas and going about on your own?
Harder. It's harder to wrestle singles matches than it is to wrestle tag team matches. I've been doing pretty well for myself, I think. I mean, I've been racking up a lot of wins over some of the local talents, and I've been going to Edmonton and Regina and doing pretty well for myself there, and it's been a fun experience trying to break out and try to create a name for myself. You know, I've been under Mentolo's incredibly dark shadow for a long time, so now I'm kind of, you know, getting out and showing everyone the light.
And what are some of your goals?
Mentolo's black.
That's exactly what I gathered you were trying to say. So what are some of your goals and short-term and long-term with CWE and Tyler Colton in general now that you're off on your own and taking your own path?
Oh, well, I mean, it's, you know, it's always a fight at the top of the mountain. Eddie Mello right now is the CWE champion, and, you know, that's, I think people would like to see a little more, maybe younger, maybe more handsome, maybe a little bit of better physique, maybe a little bit more of a, more time up there. Who knows? We can see about that.
Well, you and Metal, that's a neck and neck battle in all those departments.
I think so too. I'm sure you agree with that too.
Most recently, you had probably what would be your biggest match to date, and that was with the Man Beast Rhino in Selkirk. What can you tell us about your time in Selkirk against Rhino, and if was there any pressure, you know, getting into your first match with a star of that caliber?
Yeah. I mean, there definitely was pressure. I showed up sick that day. I was really sick.
Sick or hungover?
No. I don't. Anybody who knows me knows that I'm not really a partier. I'm not really a drinker. I try to stay away from that stuff. shut up. I showed up sick, and Rhino's not exactly known as being a guy who's like, you know, light, dainty, whatever. He's the war machine, right? He's gonna beat you up, and you're gonna feel it. And that's exactly what happened. We had a good match, you know, and it was fun, but he really took it to me and made me wish that I had maybe gotten a little more sleep the night before.
So working with someone like Rhino, how did you feel you matched up being so young into the business, getting in the ring with a 20-plus-year veteran who's held world titles across the wrestling world? How did you feel you did personally getting in the ring and squaring up with someone like that?
Well, I mean, like, it's, you know, there's nothing I'm going to teach him, that's for sure. It's strictly a learning experience for me. Like, I those are the opportunities to show that, you know, I you know, even though I'm working on a much smaller scale than he is, I can hang with guys like that, and I'm not going to be lost in the shuffles compared to these guys too. You know, if you guys want to put on a match with me, I can go toe to toe with them. I did it with Paul London, I did it with Rhino, and I like Kenny Omega. I can keep up with these guys.
Now, you're kind of roped into a small group of guys here because you're, you know, Winnipeg Wrestling hasn't produced a lot of new faces in the last year. I don't know if that's because wrestling isn't as popular as it once was. So you don't have as many people coming through the doors wanting to be professional wrestlers. You know, when I started wrestling, you know, 10 years ago, there was 200 wrestlers in the city of Winnipeg. Everybody in the city was a city of, you know, everyone in the city of Winnipeg was a wrestler or was pretending to be one. And that's kind of dried up. And because of that, there hasn't been
a... really good to event.
Oh, they were all awesome. They're all really good and really left a positive impact on the business before they left it. And now that's not the case. You know, in the last 5 years, there's been a small group of guys that have come through and been considered new faces in Winnipeg. And, you know, you being the only one from CWE as the only graduate for the Academy, you know, Tommy Lee Curtis, you know, could probably get put into that category, you know, because he's only been around the Winnipeg scene for about 5 years or so. And then a lot of times you get compared to guys like Jay Walker, Leo London, David London, James Beaver, Jackie Lee, Scott Justice, who worked for another company in town. But because you guys are in this, you know, that same age bracket and same experience bracket, you kind of get lumped in together as the, you know, the next generation of Winnipeg wrestling. What are your thoughts on the other group of young guys currently working in Winnipeg and how people rank you compared to them? So as someone who's so dedicated and putting all that time into the business, you know, a lot of guys do start off full of piss and vinegar and get on the road and try to, you know, try to get out there and branch out. And if they don't see that success right away or get to that next level as soon as they had hoped, they kind of settle into being, you know, local wrestlers for the duration of their career. Is that something you see yourself doing, or are you still focused and committed to getting on the road and making something of yourself? Or do you have you set a deadline, or, hey, if I'm not here at a certain time, I'm going to, you know, get accustomed to life in Winnipeg? Too long ago, I guess maybe a little over a year ago now, it was one of the final Steel Town Pro Wrestling shows out in Aarberg, Manitoba. You had a little bit of an incident, so to speak, or confrontation with another local promoter in town by the name of Mark Merrick. What's your heat with Mark Merrick, and what prompted this confrontation in Aarberg?
Mark Merrick is a guy who just kills me because he seems to genuinely believe believe that he's like a wrestler and respected the business. Like, and that's the incredible part. He actually seems to believe that. He likes to go on and like, but he goes to shows and like he puts on a Facebook status like, oh, I went and sat in the front row and booed all the faces and cheered all the heels and people were chanting "shut the fuck up" to me and stuff like that. It's like, well, why are you as a wrestler? If you were a serious person in the business, why are you trying to ruin it for fans? Why are you trying to make sure nobody has a good time besides you? You know, so, and I was riding with somebody. I'm trying to think who it was. It was somebody that I've driven with quite a bit. And the person that I was sitting next to decided to text Mark Merrick and say, just as a sort of a rib, to say, hey, what do you think of, and then named a bunch of wrestlers. And he named me. And Mark Merrick said, you know what? I don't think he's very good. I think you should stop booking him. Or something to that effect. Do you remember? Do you know who that was, Danny? I don't remember.
I think that was me and you riding down the road, actually.
Oh, it was you. That's right. It was you. That's right. It was one of the last SW shows. It wasn't the last one. It was one of the last ones. It was in Morden, I think. And I saw him there, and I walked up to him, and I asked him why he believed that after training with Mentolo for a year and after having, you know, paid my dues and well, I'm still paying them, but paying my dues and you know, doing the traveling that I've done and working with the people that I've worked with and putting the time that I have, why I don't deserve to, you know, be in a wrestling ring, and why I don't deserve to, you know, wrestle. Like, why, as if Winnipeg Wrestling is, you know, above me, I shouldn't be allowed in it or something like that. And he had nothing really to say. He did a lot of backpedaling. He did a lot of, well, I didn't say that, I didn't say this. And, oh, I was shown the text you did say, you little piece of shit, blah, blah, blah. And I was given advice from another wrestler to slap him in the face, and I decided that wasn't taking him a little too far, so I decided not to do that. But he's just a guy who just, he kills me. Like, and he's like, oh, no, I wanted to book MX for this show or that show. And I said, I will never, ever, ever work for you. And that's stayed very true to this day.
That's right. Like, I've known Merrick a long, long time, and I personally don't have an issue with him, and he can run his wrestling and do his thing. You know, you can't, you know, you can only control what you do, not what others do.
Yeah.
And he's going to do his thing. And that's where kind of a rift happened between myself and Merrick, where I kind of distanced myself from his product and my guys started doing so. Is as far as I knew, we were on the level. There was no problems being had, but then I'd hear through so many different various sources that he would run down our product at every option, you know, at every turn he had, not even just people in the business. Cause you know, that could always, you know, you have to take that with a grain of salt when you hear something from a wrestler, but I was hearing from people like, you know, he did a function at Hooters, to fundraise for the Comic-Con, for example. And he was fucking burying us beyond belief to the manager at Hooters, not knowing that I'm a friend of the manager at Hooters. And, Kevin Cannon actually works at Hooters. So this this quickly got back. Sorry?
Kevin Cannon is a waitress there, I believe.
Yes, he is. Yep. And so, you know, so little things like that, or, to certain fans and such, you know, it's, you know, one thing for guys in the business not to care about what another one's doing or have a dislike for somebody. But then when you're going to, you know, people in the business community or even to fans directly and putting down a product, it's completely unprofessional and it's not warranted. And that's how you get heat for yourself. And when you get labeled as a guy who's two-faced, you can't trust, who you're always having to go to saying, hey, are you saying this? No, 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 I'm not saying this. And then you hear the exact same thing from somebody else. That's how you develop a reputation for yourself. And you go from being a guy who might, you know, not necessarily deserve to be in the business, that guys were willing to help out and give a chance to guys that people completely wash their hands of and don't want to be involved with. And I think that's a case of that.
Yeah, well, that's where he's at, and he puts on his wrestling show and stuff, and he uses some guy, and like, I'll never fault somebody for working on a wrestling show. You get your work where you can. It's Canadian independent wrestling, and the shows are few and far between. But some of the talent that he does use, and including himself, it's shameful, and it hurts what we're doing. And like when people see that, they think, oh, this is wrestling. That's kind of what I thought wrestling was, sort of a joke. And it really makes what we're doing that much harder, and it makes, you know, our jobs harder. So we have to really go out there and show them that, no, wrestling is something, it's something awesome and fun and cool to watch, and it can be hard-hitting. It doesn't have to be hokey and shitty like what you've seen in other shows.
And that's exactly it. Like, I'm very realistic to independent wrestling and realize a good vast majority of people that get involved are let in very easily or shouldn't be involved. So you kind of have to work with the way of the land and the people that are involved in it. And I recall, like, the first year that he did Comic-Con, he, to his credit, tried to book a lot of really good guys for it, and he did. I worked with Harry Smith. I know Royce and ATM worked.
MAN was on the show.
So he was putting forth the effort to get some good guys. So we're like, you know what? We'll give the kid a chance. He's trying to do something positive here for the Winnipeg wrestling scene. And then we went to the Comic-Con to watch it, and we realized it was completely opposite of that. And it was myself, Vance Nevada, Candelo, and somebody else watching from afar on night one at just the atrocity of some of the stuff put in front of a ring in front of thousands of people and literally pissing away a golden opportunity to showcase professional wrestling at a high level and to look important here locally. So we're like, okay, well, he's got zero experience in the business. He's not a trained wrestler, so he doesn't understand how to put a match together. So he means he probably doesn't know how to put a show together because he doesn't have any experience doing that. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He's, you know, trying to put something big together here. We sat him down and we're saying, you know, after that first night, after some of the worst wrestling with people, like legitimately, and I don't say this to be rude, legitimately mentally handicapped people were in wrestling matches. These are people that have a mental deficiency, and it's not safe to put them in a ring against each other, never mind with anybody for that matter. And that was something.
I should laugh because it's true. I know what you're saying. It is, and
you know, we're like, okay, well. You know, it was a Friday, it was, you know, the slower night of the Comic-Con, so, you know, tomorrow's going to be huge, Brett's here, it's going to be big, there's going to be a lot of people, let's go talk to him, and let's try to, you know, turn things around for the weekend. And, you know, that's what we did. Me, Vance, and somebody else approached him, and we said, hey, like, listen, you know, we're not saying we know how, you know, we know the only way to do it, or the only right way to do it, you know, but we all have a lot of experience wrestling and running shows. So, you know, let us give you a hand to piece this together a little bit better and make something of this opportunity. And he's like, oh, yeah, you know, I could use the help. I'd like to help. And then sure enough, he turned around and buried all of us. All these guys are trying to take over my show. Like, he's texting Harry Smith saying, oh, that fucking Vance Nevada guy is, you know, trying to take over the book of my show and stuff like that. And it wasn't anyone trying to take over a show. We were literally just trying to rein it in and piece it together a little bit. And not having the, you know, when you're, you know, I'm a booker and a wrestler myself, so I understand, you know, it could be a stressful thing, but I like to think I'm an equipped wrestler and I have the ability to put on a show. When you're not an equipped wrestler and you have no experience running shows and you're doing both, it's going to fall apart. So a lot of times he's putting forth this talent that he doesn't know necessarily who's good or bad. He thinks they're good. You know, in his mind, I think he legitimately believes they're good because he's got that. Oh, exactly, because because he's not a trained professional. He doesn't know the difference between good and bad. So when he's watching, right. So when he watches these guys, he's watching just like some fans might watch them and go, I don't really know what the difference is between good and bad or why that's bad. And that's where the problem, you know, became where it's like, okay, well, if you're not going to put forth the effort to, you know, to use the best talent available to you, when they're knocking at your door saying, hey, we're willing to help you. I'm willing to get you the guys you need. I'm not even necessarily saying my crew or anyone's crew specifically, but there are, you know, a vast number of guys available to you that will make your shows good. So why are you booking guys that are untrained and don't belong anywhere near a wrestling ring when you'll have these guys wrestle for you probably for very little to no money as it is? And that's kind of the route they went, and that's why we distance ourselves from it. And it's very much like that. You know, people see bad wrestling and they associate local wrestling together. I remember his TV show launched the same time ours did, like the same week almost. And because we're pumping up this big debut on TV to people that, you know, didn't follow it too closely or pay, you know, that close of attention to it, they assumed that was our product. And so now they're turning on Shaw TV, they're seeing Mark Merrick, and that's not what our product is. And because of that, we're now getting that perception. And I'm not saying we don't run some bad wrestling because we've had some fucking terrible matches on our TV. Well, there's a good six-way coming up on TV that's going to be fucking awesome. But for the most part, like, we've had some bad matches. And we have some guys that are limited, most definitely. You know, but the advantage I have being a wrestler who's wrestled all these guys, I know how to book them appropriately and with the appropriate talent to hide those weaknesses. I don't think he has that ability or knowledge to do. So a lot of times he's like, oh, that guy could wrestle that guy. That guy versus that guy would never appear on my show because I know the two of them getting in a ring together is an awful idea. If I'm going to have to book that guy or I'm giving that guy an opportunity, he's going to be in the ring with so-and-so who could carry him and lead him through something. So So, you know, he does have a great opportunity at hand with the things he's doing, you know, with his mall shows and his television product. And luckily he's got some good guys on them, like Harry Smith, Adam Knight. You know, some of those young guys are putting together some decent stuff, but he's got a good opportunity at his hand to make something count. And I honestly, legitimately hope that he can pull it together and consistently put forth his best foot to showcase professional wrestling in a positive light, because he does have that ability to do that right now. The spotlight's on him, you know, through various channels. So make the most of it is all I ask. I'm not saying don't run wrestling, because I run wrestling. Great, run wrestling. Just give off a positive image of it.
Well, I just remember when I first started wrestling, you told me that, like, you had a guy, like, I keep bringing him up, but walking around the bar telling him he's a professional wrestler, that doesn't bring him up to, like, oh, that guy's a wrestler, so maybe he actually is cool. Maybe he actually is in better shape than he looks like. That just pulls us down to be like, oh, he does the same thing that Hump over here does. You know, it makes us look shitty. That's all it does.
Yeah, and perception's reality. So if that's their perception of what wrestling is, that's what the reality of wrestling is.
Perception is reality, yes.
So I want to segue into some fan questions. We had three questions sent in for Tyler Colton by a man named Phil Lacio.
Oh, okay. Phil, yeah.
I'm a buddy of yours, I'm sure. And he says, after what's been regarded as Tyler Colton's best match, how did he feel about his six-way match at Holy Cross Gymnasium?
The match didn't go as we expected, that's for sure. Somebody in the match, and maybe it was Kamikaze, maybe it was me, who knows? But somebody showed up very unfit to perform. And it completely threw off what the match was, and it was a six-man match. There should have been lots of cool action and lots of things going on and lots of, you know, stuff. But what ended up happening was a guy falling off the ring, hitting his head really hard, and then pretty much finishing the match right around there. And you already buried this guy in your status. So, you know, if anyone wants to hear it, you see who it was, they can just go to your status. But someone may have, shit their pants during the match.
Kevin Chevy shit his pants.
I don't know if that's clear enough what I'm trying to say, but someone shit their pants during the match.
Kevin Chevy shit his pants.
And that affected the match pretty significantly. And, yeah, I mean, really, basically, everything that could go wrong in a match went wrong in that one. Let's talk about his experience and just leave it where it was.
One man shit his pants, and the match as a whole shit the bed.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. That's a good way to put it.
Phil Lacio has another question. Phil says, it's been noted that Tyler Colton has spent time training with Brian Rich. Can he describe what the competition was like in and out of the ring, especially focusing on the out of the ring aspect?
I mean, it was pretty severe. You know, before I go on, I want to say that Brian Rich actually did show up, he did try hard, he did get better, and he's, like myself, he's far from being a perfect wrestler, a perfect worker, but he really has improved a lot. However, he was a guy who, when I say wrestling came hard to people, it came fucking really, really, really hard to him, and it still is to this day. But outside the ring, I do remember this is told from the recollection of mental illness. This is what he told me, was that there was a girl who he was sort of crushing on, and then she sort of started being into me, and I had a girlfriend at the time, so I didn't really, you know, I wasn't really trying for it, but she was kind of like, you know, she was following me around, and she was buying me drinks and all this stuff, and then Brian Rich was said to be on the drive home, pressing his face and hands up against the back window of the car, like tears streaming down his cheek, like quietly under his breath, like, why? And, yeah, so, I mean, like, he was fun to have around, but also, he, you know, don't get between him and his girl, because you don't want, you know, it's not fun to see a grown man cry.
So was there a rivalry between you two in and out of the ring?
I wouldn't call it a rivalry. I would say it was I mean, it'd be funnier if there was a rivalry of some kind, but it was kind of just like a, you know, like we helped each other. It was hard to find students who would consistently show up to training, so it was nice to have somebody who would be there all the time. I mean, I don't know, I guess, like, not to bury the guy, but, you know, you tell me if there's a rivalry, like, who won, I guess, I don't know. Like, if there's a rivalry, I think there's probably a winner.
Felatio asks, any recommendations on massage parlors in Regina?
Yeah, actually, I do a recommendation. Because I won't say his name, but there was a certain wrestler A, we'll call him, who, when we were in Regina, he went to every single girl in the bar, and I mean every single girl. Again, I had a girlfriend at the time, so I was kind of standing back watching. But he went to every single girl, and just, and I'm not kidding, he struck out again and again and again and again and again. So wrestler A decided, when we went back to the hotel, we drove past the place, and a bright neon, keep in mind it's 3 in the morning, and a bright neon sign that said massage, and then beneath that another one that said open. And wrestler A thought, what kind of massage parlor would be open at holy shit, I just told the story, reminding myself my mom's probably going to listen to this. anyway, so wrestler A thought to himself, what kind of strange massage parlor would be open at this time? So wrestler A decided. And I don't know what happened. I have no idea what happens in places like that. I imagine he got a massage, paid his money, and walked out. Does that make sense to you? Or?
That makes sense to me. We like to end our program with a segment we call Ribs, Rants, and Road Stories, and I think we've started to go down the path with the massage parlor. Do you have any stories or experiences from the road involving ribs or rats you'd like to share with the group?
Oh, man. Again, keeping in mind that my mom is probably going to listen to this podcast.
I think your mom will be proud of you and how you've grown as a man.
Oh, she'll definitely be doing something, that's for sure. For some reason, things always happen in Regina. I don't know why. Regina's not known for being like a big crazy town or anything, but I guess when wrestling comes through, kind of anything can happen. We'll say again, wrestler A, B, and C.
Not wrestler TLC?
Yeah, wrestler A, B, and TLC. We went to some bar, and it was going real well for everybody, and I had a girlfriend, so I'm sort of standing away. Just, you know, this is what you do when you have a girlfriend, Dan. You stand back and you watch this happen. And wrestler A was the first one to grab somebody, and he was gone. He was out the door. He went back to the hotel. Wrestler B met a lovely, larger set woman, a black woman named Dominga. and she was solid. She was really solid. And then wrestler C split with some random characters. And so I had a girlfriend, but I'm still pretty good at the manipulation game. So I got a girl to go buy me McDonald's and then drive me back to my hotel and drop me off. And then there's some sort of like in between there where I fell asleep in front of the door or something like that. I don't remember that part of the story, but where I might have passed out outside the hotel or something. But Mr. Rich, wrestler A, I'm sorry. The girl that he brought back, in his recollection, all of a sudden started asking for money and was like, oh, like, you know, kind of take things from the hotel and stuff. And so he believed that she may have been the lady of the evening.
I recall that because we went to the bar. We were there not even 10, 15 minutes, and Brian Rich comes over. Brian Rich is wrestler A, by the way. Brian Rich is wrestler A. So we go to the bar. I don't care. I have nothing to hide. Brian Rich comes up to us. Oh, guys, I'm over. And we're like, what do you mean? Oh, like this girl wants the fees. And we're like, we've been here 10 minutes. How is that possible? Oh, I need the hotel key. So Brian Rich like leaves after being there 10, 15 minutes.
I was impressed at the time.
Yeah, we're like, wow, that's incredible. Like, wow, Brian Rich, 10, 15 minutes, close the deal. So after we end up getting back to the hotel, Brian Rich is there alone, and we ask him what happens.
And he's like, ugh, like, we got back to the room and, like, I was trying to fees, but she kept, like, asking me for money and stuff.
I'm like, so she was probably a hooker and she picked you up in the bar.
Oh, like, I don't think so.
No, I don't think that was what happened. No.
I was just like, I don't know. Like, I think she just needed some money.
I'm like, if she's asking for money before you have sex, she's probably a hooker. So Brian Rich said he then, like, had to, like, ask her to leave. Realistically, he probably paid her, had sex with her, and she went on her way. Or at least that's what I like to think.
So, yeah, at that point, Russ would be, went with Dominga, and Tom, Russ would be, showed up the next morning, saying that he had breakfast made for him and stuff, so that sounds pretty cool. And then, former WWE champion and tag team champion AJ Sanchez. Wrestler C. He's gone. He was completely gone. And this is when he had our car and he had parked it somewhere and then gone and partied. So us, just being the total jabronis that we were, are just walking down the street, like walking down the highway, wheeling our bags behind us, just hoping that AJ sees us, just hoping that he drives by and happens to see these three pathetic independent wrestlers. Just all hungover, all had our weird stories throughout the evening, and just like, and then eventually he did. He came screaming around the corner, and apparently he slept. I heard that he slept in the park with Rex Roberts or something.
Yeah, what happened? We all kind of went our own separate ways. Like, I was with AJ, Rex, you know, some friends in Regina, and Brian Rich went back with the hooker. You and Shaggy went on your way. And, you know, me, I went to party with the boys and AJ and Rex. And I remember just being, like, really sick, like, physically ill, not, like, drunk sick, and wanting to leave. And AJ was being a prick and was, like, egging me on. He wouldn't take me back to the hotel, really giving me a hard time. So I just said, to hell with it. And then I started, like, walking back to the hotel. I had no idea where I was in Regina. Like, this was in the middle of the night. I had way too much to drink. I'm just wandering the streets. Finally, my friend comes and picks me up and brings me back to the hotel. I remember waking up in the morning, opening the door. There's you passed out in front of the door on the balcony of the hotel because nobody would let. Yeah, because nobody would let you in because everyone was passed out sleeping. So you slept like on the front step like a dog.
Yeah.
We then call AJ looking for him to try to find him, so we can get going. He's not answering his phone, so it's checkout time. We got to get out. And AJ's nowhere to be found. So sure enough, we pack up our bags like a bunch of jobbers and start like walking down Highway 1 with our pulley bags. And then eventually, like half hour later, AJ finally calls us. I guess he like passed out in a bed cuddling Rex Roberts. So he then came and got us, and on our merry way we went.
Yeah. Regina's a weird town. Weird things happen there. I think if people just went there more often, they would see that.
Yeah, a lot of people shit talk Regina, but it's a great party town if you're into that kind of thing. Like back when I used to get wild and crazy, like going to, like, I'm sure like Regina took years off my life, like in my younger years of going there. Like it gets out of hand there. Well, back in the, you missed like good times back in the day. Like Rex Roberts used to go really hard. King Cash, who's now married with kids, who's very tame and relaxed, used to be pretty wild. I remember like we left a bar in Regina and we're going to a party, me, Cash, and like I think there's like a couple chicks in the car, and we're going to a party and some guy like cut Cash off in the parking lot. So he like they cut him off in the parking lot, like in a big truck. So like Cash loses his mind and starts like cutting a promo through the window. The guys flip him off. So Cash is like, well, that's it. It's on. So Cash like.
Anybody doesn't know Cash. He's like a big, just like tough guy. Like he's a big, brawling, mean guy.
Yeah. He doesn't take shit from anybody. Like he'll throw down.
No.
So these guys like flip off Cash. So Cash is then on a mission. He's like speeding through Regina, following these guys. Follows them, and just by chance, there's a train, so this truck in front of us has to stop for the train. Cash just gets out of the car, like without warning, just jumps out of the car, opens the guy's door, and starts unloading on them. Like, he just leaves them laying on the side of the road, like selling outside their truck, and then we went on our way. Like, Cash was out of control.
Cash is a dangerous man.
Yeah. You've shown some tendencies like that yourself in Regina. You've gotten a little wild and crazy. Maybe there's something in the liquor there that just makes people want to fight.
I don't think that's happened, but if you recall, maybe it has. I don't know.
It has happened a time or two where you may have gotten a little aggressive in a Regina bar.
Well, if you recall, you were there, you know. If you weren't, you don't.
Todd, I want to thank you for taking the time to come and join us and offer us your perspective on Winnipeg wrestling and your career.
Of course, man. Anytime.
That's going to wrap up another edition of Elite Wrestling Radio. Tune in next week. We'll be back with some more ribs, rats, and road stories and all-around good times of Winnipeg wrestling. See you next week.
And Tommy Lee Curtis.